Text 51551. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, are mealtimes a battle in your house? Are the children stuck in a cycle of refusing to try new food or sticking to a few foods they like? White food only, please. Occupational therapist and feeding therapist Teresa Foley is here to help. If you have any questions for Teresa about picky eaters, do get them into us. 51551 or 087 032 32 32. Good afternoon, Teresa.
Hi, Ray. How are you? Thanks for having me.
How did you end up as a feeding therapist?
That's a good question. Yeah. So I have been a children's occupational therapist for the past 17 years. So child development and infant development is something I've always worked in. However, my area of clinical expertise, and I guess my passion, is supporting babies and children who might struggle to eat for some reason, to eat well and to enjoy food and mealtimes, because I love to eat and I think lots of people do. But there is a misconception out there that learning to eat can be really simple. And for some children and babies, whether it's through illness, you know, things like autism, neurodiversity, or for sometimes complex feeding challenges, it can be really hard. And I guess I have seen through supporting children and their parents and their families, the stress and the anxiety that it can bring when we want to feed our little children, but it's just a bit trickier than we might have anticipated.
And you have three children of your own.
I do, yeah.
And, so, and they're all perfect eaters.
Absolutely not. I wish they were, but they are all varying levels of success, I would say. And really interestingly, the research tells us that parenting actually doesn't have as much to do with how our children turn out. Yeah, so the science tells us that you can parent two children in the exact same way, feed them in the exact same way, but actually their genetics have more of a part to play in their eating.
Isn't that interesting?
Styles, yeah, really interesting.
I wonder, is that anything to do with the fact that some of us are super tasters?
That's part of the theory for sure. And, you know, a lot of times parents will say to me, oh, I'm worried I didn't do the right thing, or I'm worried possibly that I maybe had some part to play in this. And then I say to them, like, you know, the genetics do play a part. Right. And actually, because feeding and eating is such a complex process, there's loads of different neurological processes and developmental processes happening. So I say to parents, chances are you didn't cause this, but maybe there are some things we might be able to do to make it better.
Okay, well, let's get on to those then.
Okay.
So I suppose it's straightforward enough if you're breastfeeding or bottle feeding. And then it's the weaning process is where the first problems start. So what are the top line tips on weaning?
Okay, so I guess as a clinician, I would be saying to parents, before you even delve in with your, you know, your spoon feeds and everything else, just be sure that your gorgeous little baby is even ready to start weaning. So things that we look at before we even start the weaning process are, is the baby ready to sit up in the high chair themselves? Because sometimes they might just not be fully ready for that yet. So we want them to be able to support themselves in the high chair, hold their head up. And even just things like, there's a little reflex called the tongue thrust reflex. And if that is still there, the baby might just need a few more weeks before you start the weaning process.
Well, explain that to me.
So that's my middle little boy. He showed that when I started giving him like little spoonfuls of purees and things, he was sticking his tongue out in response to the food coming to him. So he was actually pushing the food back out of his mouth.
I'm not ready.
He was...
Give it a little while.
Exactly.
And that's why there is no exact age to start weaning.
So like best advice, best evidence would say about 5.5 or 6 months.
Right.
But again, I would say with my clinician's hat on, watch your baby, first of all. And that's the best sign.
And then it's baby food. It's
absolutely.
Liquidized food.
Possibly. So I suppose there's two kind of approaches to it. There's the purees, the blended food, or the other one, which we call baby-led weaning or family foods. But you can also do a combination of both. Mm. You know, and as I remember as a first-time mum myself, I had everything shiny and ready to go. And I think I was possibly videoing the first, you know, the first feed, and everything was very exciting. And that is great, but ultimately that's not sustainable long term. So I recommend to families, do what works best for the family. So if you are making spaghetti bolognese, absolutely, if you want to blend up some of the sauce for the baby, but equally give them some of the pasta that the family is having. Yeah. It needs to work for everyone.
And I was saying that fun is an important part of it.
Absolutely.
And that I suppose it's important that everybody is relaxed.
Absolutely.
which is easy to say, difficult to do. isn't it?
Absolutely, yes. And I was away last week and I heard a mum at breakfast, she was saying to her daughter, you liked this last year, just eat it. Go on, I'm telling you, you liked it last year and you will like it. And I suppose from in my line of work, we recommend a responsive feeding approach is what it's called, where we try and meet the child where they're at in terms of their overall development, where they're at in terms of their eating, their feeding, instead of, I suppose, us telling them what to do, you know. So you try and give the child the space to eat as best they can at that time.
What are the common mistakes that people make?
I think we as parents are so keen to get our children to eat.
Well, that's important.
Yeah,
yes,
we want them to eat. We just want them to eat the food we've prepared for them. And so lots of, and I think lots of us as well grew up with maybe messages being given to us at dinner time, like you'll sit there until your dinner is done and you won't get dessert until you eat your dinner. And even nowadays, things like just two more bites and then you can have your dessert. The interesting thing about that is that you're kind of overriding the child's own internal signals for them to listen to their hunger cues, their readiness to eat. So ultimately, we want to give the child space to think about, okay, am I really hungry? Do I like this food? And maybe they're not ready to eat.
But I may have other children to feed and I may have things to do and bring somebody to gymnastics or choir practice or whatever.
I know.
So you can't stay with that particular child forever.
And that's totally understandable. Yeah. But maybe if they don't feel like eating right now, you can just say, that's fine. Let's try again later. Uh-huh. Maybe your tummy will feel more hungry then.
Now, that's an interesting one.
Okay.
Yes. No, it is though, isn't it? Because we think, well, this is mealtime and you are hungry, you will eat. and that's, you know, I say so. So it might be good just to go, well, maybe we'll try it again later on.
Absolutely. Yeah. And again, going back to, as you said, we want to keep things relaxed. Yes. We want to keep it as calm as we possibly can. So if the child says, I'm not hungry now, I don't want to eat, you can just say, okay, that's fine. Don't get into an argument. Just keep everything calm, even if you don't feel calm on the inside.
Well, here's the thing. I suppose most parents would start out calm.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
And then, for example, you know, you have your liquidized or whatever spaghetti bolognese sauce and the child sticks the hand into it and throws it at you and you just put on a new blouse because you're going out.
Yeah.
and then the calmness sort of drifts away.
Feel your blood pressure rising slightly. Absolutely. But I suppose I do encourage parents as much as you can, even if you don't feel calm on the inside, to try and keep things as calm as possible. Just to, you know, help. I suppose we never want the child to dread mealtimes. We don't want the child to dread coming to the dinner table.
No.
So actually, I would say to parents, it's probably more important, even if the child's going to sit there and maybe not eat much, we would rather have them there and feel comfortable at the table.
We have some questions for you. I can't put them, I can't see where they are there. So you may bring in another set for me. Oh, here, sorry. Yes, yes. Somebody says super tasting is genetic. It's inherited from one or both parents. So that's, for example, I think I am a super taster, isn't it? Some people can taste cucumber and others can't.
Yes, that's right. Yes. Yeah, I can't taste it.
You can't taste it. So you're not a super taster.
Mustn't be, no.
Yes.
But interestingly, some people are super tasters, but then you have the opposite of that as well. So you have some people who taste very little.
Yes.
So I think it's interesting to consider how much. You know, at the end of the day, if a child has their own specific food preferences, we have to respect that as well, you know?
Yeah, unless it's all beige. That's the thing. And I think there's a lot of pressure on parents because they find it embarrassing, I think. Mm-hmm. Some parents might, if their child isn't a healthy eater.
Yeah.
Because there's all sorts of messages coming from left, right and centre, isn't there?
I think that's a really fair comment. And I think parents nowadays are bombarded with so much information, you know, compared to maybe a generation ago when you just gave your child whatever was for dinner. So parents do say to me, I feel like I have so much information, I don't know where to start. And ultimately, like, you have to do what works for the family, what works for your child. But at the same time, if they sometimes... Some children do need a little bit of extra help when it comes to feeding and feeding challenges. And I guess it's trying to decide, a helpful kind of distinction that I help parents make is your child a picky eater? Is this a minimal disruption for you and the child and the family? Or is it a big problem that's maybe causing a good bit of stress? Is your child maybe more of what we call a problem eater? And maybe would they benefit or would you benefit from some support in this
area? How do you know the difference between a picky and a problem eater?
So usually a picky eater is someone who has their same preferred foods, but overall can eat a relatively broad diet. We would say about approximately 30 foods, give or take. A problem eater then will eat less foods, so maybe below 20 foods, maybe below 10, maybe in extreme cases less than 5 foods in total. The picky eater might, as you said, prefer the beige food, the bland food, but overall they will eat food from most food groups, whereas the problem eaters might only eat from one or two food groups in total. And also, I always encourage people to think about the impact that the child's eating preferences are having on the whole family. So, you know, if it's a mild inconvenience for you as a parent, the child won't eat the broccoli or the carrots, whatever, but really it's no big deal. However, if you as a family have been impacted by the child that they can't eat at parties, you can't eat out, you can't go on holidays because you're worried the child won't be able to eat the food, that's when I would be considering that they're a problem eater and they might need some professional help.
Okay. So these came in for you, Teresa. I have a 7-year-old son who only wants to eat chicken burgers for his dinner. He won't eat fruit, drinks water only, and complains if I mix veg with any sort of meat and adds potato. How can I get him to eat something healthier? He will eat beans but no veg unless it's blended into his meat and potato.
Okay, so I suppose in the first instance, if we're thinking again about nutrition overall, that I know from literally what you're telling me there, that boy is probably hitting a number of food groups on the food pyramid. So I'm not to diminish the concerns, but equally I would say to the parent, it sounds like you are doing great. I would be encouraging maybe just some participation in like food away from mealtimes, because you don't want all the stress and pressure to be on dinner time. And I know this kind of fixation that we all have in vegetables, but could you maybe introduce something new? Like, you know, a pancake party on the weekends where you might put out some pancakes and strawberries and chocolate sauce, and it's all very relaxed and a bit of crack. You know, keep it fun and keep it enticing for the child.
Okay. Hello, Teresa. An autistic child that will only eat pasta and only Aldi sausages. Any suggestions as to how to change this diet?
Okay, so this is, I suppose, my kind of clinical area of expertise, supporting autistic children with eating. And really interesting to know that the latest data we have says that up to 89% of autistic people experience some type of feeding challenges. So it's very common. In this instance, I would definitely be recommending that the child seek support and the family seek support from a feeding professional. So ideally a CORA registered occupational therapist, dietitian, speech and language therapist, because as you can hear now, as you know from us chatting, that child is missing food from a number of food groups. So they need more help in that area.
Yeah. So it's a common thing in children with autism.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Right. Because they like everything to be the same. Is that part of it? Or?
Yeah, that's absolutely part of it. I suppose there's a big part of it down to our sensory processing preferences, you know, and actually eating is the most complex sensory activity that as we as human beings engage in. So if you think about it, eating is so much more than just food going into your mouth. You look at food, you smell food, you actually might even hear it being cooked in the kitchen, the appearance of food. So that child who likes the Aldi sausages, he'll be looking at the packaging of the sausages saying, okay, that one doesn't look like my preferred sausages. So there's so many components involved in it, and sensory processing is a big part of that.
And most people by the age of 15, 16, 17 are having an okay diet, aren't they?
Look, it depends what you mean by okay. Yeah, I think most people probably settle on their preferred foods.
I suppose what I'm saying is that it sort of comes right for most people in the end.
And I think that is fair to say. Yeah. Like, I know lots of people who, when they were 7 or 8, were probably eating the beige diet that you described. But as the years go on, they probably have become a little bit more adventurous in their diet. So I do say that to parents. I do say, this is not forever.
Yes.
It might feel they're going to be still eating chicken dippers.
This too will pass.
Yeah, and they're just because they're eating chicken dippers when they're 8, they won't necessarily be eating them when they're 21.
Okay. Teresa Foley, occupational therapist and feeding therapist, thanks so much for coming in today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ray.
Break.